Kick it! Casting all day, man, I can't get a bite. Things are gonna change when I troll tonight. Mastic classes with no homework. But this side beat is a brand new jerk. You gotta fight! For your right, for Muskies!
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360
Setting
podcast.
This real with the Jaber. Awesome
Steven, what's happening?
Kick it! Kick it!
You do that too well.
Kick it!
I can't even.
Thank you.
It's like a bird.
I almost blew my voice out. I cracked on one of them.
Like a snarky little bird you are.
Oh, like the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, you know, it's just that there's that thing. Anyway, what's going on,
Steve,
in the Northwoods?
Well, huh? You have to fight for your old right to fight muskie.
I guess.
Muskie season is right around the corner, Stephen. Well, we got some stuff rolling in, too. Yeah, it's just a matter of weeks.
Weeks
I mean, the southern half or the southern two-thirds of whatever way you want to slice and dice the state of Wisconsin mm-hmm. opens up in, less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, less
than 2 weeks.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, Northwoods.
Sweet.
Last week of May? What's
Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, last weekend of May.
There you go.
Another month.
We're there. No more complaining. You know.
Hey, there's opportunities nearby, you know, and I don't know if Minnesota has those opportunities quite like, you know, we have, there's a few lakes that are actually open. You're not too far from my house, too.
Oh, well, yeah, we're done with ice, but looks like, what else, did the Northern Light stuff show up this week? Is that new here?
We got another surprise big shipment of Lake X lures in a couple days back, and just out of nowhere, it's like, oh man! So we got refilled because the first wave was almost done from the previous week. So
nice.
We're in pretty good shape on Lake X stuff. And rumor has it that the Savage stuff, all that stuff that Mads was talking about a few weeks ago, and Danny Herbeck.
Yep.
And that stuff is rolling in, possibly even starting tomorrow. So I'll get it on the website as soon as I have pictures processed of all the different colors and sizes. There's 6 different bucktail models and like 10, 11 colors. And the Burba tube, that 3D Burba tube thing,
mm-hmm.
looks pretty cool. I got some of that stuff shot underwater legally, by the way. And with DNR approval, and put some of that up so folks can see what the stuff looks like underwater.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I'm looking here. A bunch of colors in on the Lake X.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Herbeck coming up with that stuff with Mads. That's going to be cool here very shortly. Just a cool addition. Then, if you missed last week, there are some custom colors from Innovations that showed up.
Mm-hmm.
You got that.
And we got more custom colors from Chaos Tackle in too.
Okay, when are what's in there? What
we carry a lot of custom colors in Chaos, and we got refilled on a lot of them.
Okay,
so there's a lot of them.
If you're out there just waiting for it.
Medusas and Poseidons.
Well,
the good stuff.
What more do you want? I can't believe it's been just such a crazy Netherlands and running around doing all this stuff. Just time just flying by. The fact that we're mere hours from Muskie Opener, Jay.
I know.
People,
I was
right
fishing
now,
for you this week.
It's been, I'll tell you, and a lot of people have been messaging, what do I do? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it has been just a mixed bag. I was very fortunate. I caught a Donkey Kong the other day.
Saw the picture.
Yeah.
I think it's on the app too.
Well,
beautiful.
I wrote a little like pre-spawn And I'll tell you, it's, you've heard a lot. If you listen to the show, you've heard a lot of the crap talking about pre-spawn. But mm-hmm. it's kind of a gross generality. I'll just tell you that. It's like, when it comes to where fish are staging on any body of water pre-spawn where big fish are, it's going to vary greatly. But that's just kind of like some loose parameters of, okay, here you got to fill in the blanks. You know what I'm saying? Here, I've given you the connect the dots, Jay. You can tell it's a bunny rabbit, but you got to draw the line between the dots. Oh, don't make a mistake, Jay. Oh, you messed up its ear. That's no good. So it's just going to vary everywhere you go. And I've been getting blown up on messages. You know, hey, the water temps are X, Y, and Z, right? Mm-hmm. What's happening with this? And I'm going, you got to sort of take that read lake by lake, river by river.
Yeah, yeah.
It, because there's so many things. I've seen lakes that are catching more shade. You know, something we deal with in the outside of your section of the habitat range. You can have sections or large swaths of water, vast tracts of land, Jay, if you will, that are shielded by mountains or foliage, or, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of things that have a cooling effect. So sun angle, what's getting sun, what's not getting sun. It's just too much to go, this is it, bam. No, up north, well, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, with water temps, you know, it's like, oh, water temps, you know, they're 55 degrees, and, well, that might have been a peak one day late in the day reading with sun beating down on the shallows, and it's like, well, the next 3 days, it freezes at night, and it's much colder than that, and that just wasn't enough to accelerate the pre-spawn. Possibly.
Well,
so what are you still in? I'm a pre-spawn.
I'm looking at the picture on the app. Yeah, that's a horrible picture. I'm sitting there.
I was going to say beautiful fish, but it's not. It's just a giant.
The picture sucks. And it's like, frickin'.
No, the picture's not bad. No, the fish is just, you know, kind of pre-spawn, a little schlubbed. Yeah.
Well, yeah, what's cool is I've got the video. We'll use that for something here shortly, but I'm kind of fighting. Cool. When I make the frickin' face, I'm sitting down. Come on.
That's a big
but
fish.
The deal here is, you know, you can lead a horse to water. Well, you got to figure out what's going on in your waterway with the spawning. You know, up north, the gross generality, Jay. North end of the lake, blah, 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 littoral zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've just got to know your home waters. But you can really capitalize on that if you're, you know, muskies are open year-round in Michigan. You know, UP, there's probably people, I don't know if it's open yet or de-ice, but I would guess if you're free of ice, there's some stuff. And, you know, you got Iowa and you got these different places. There's some opportunity there where you can actually get in front of a pig-a-lig-lig, they call them.
Yeah, there's a lake a half an hour away you probably don't know about, but, I mean, all you got to do is register at the DNR station and you're free to fish it.
Really? Is that across the border?
Across from Trout Lake?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, what do you know? You just do your thing. But like I said, try it. We're trying to lead you to water on the pre-spawn thing. But, you know, and we're here shortly when we get closer. Maybe next week we'll talk about, you know, the early tactics. If you don't know, then you know. But your giant killers and your traps of rattles and your different things, your different options there. But anyway, we're finally, I can't believe it's been a long December, Jay.
Yeah.
I feel like
been counting crows all day long.
Let's get after it. We've ran long the last 2 weeks. It is time for Q&A. Mike, ooh, love the show. Great content with great humor. Jay, are you telling jokes?
I can't remember the last time I did.
No, we're not trying to be funny, dude.
No,
that's ridiculous that you would just insinuate. And
kind of weird.
Kind of weird, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Get with it, man. All serious, all the time, 100%. This is musky fishing. Stop playing around.
Exactly.
Stop playing around.
Stay off my lawn.
This is not a joke.
Uh-uh.
picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue. Anyway,
looks like I picked the wrong day to stop sniffing glue.
Mike wanted to know. You ever hang around gymnasiums? Mike wanted to know if any of the music he could get. No. We pay our dues, you know. You got to, if you're going to use cover tunes and you're coming from the music thing. Yeah, I know how to, but no, we can't put it out. You can just butcher it though for a minimal fee. So just did. Always paying the price. Now Jay's working on a solo project right now. And
I am.
Yeah, yep. It's basically
my rap album.
Well, yeah. It's basically Sarah McLachlan covers. Just Jay doing the best of Sarah McLachlan. Bruce, don't let me down. Bruce. With early open water and early spring this year, how do you think it will affect the two? Here we go. Remember what I said when I was starting. What's going to happen in 2024 season? Will the fish go to their deeper summer water haunts earlier than normal? Will they stay consistent in their annual patterns? Or is it just too early to tell? Refer to my earlier statements about it's going to be body of water to body of water. Early opener, typically. Somebody just shot fireworks, I think. Yeah, that was fireworks. Jay, this is what, are fireworks legal up there? Can you buy them year-round?
Is Fred down there right now?
I don't know.
It could be Fred.
People are starting to barbecue, and apparently barbecues and fireworks are now synonymous. But early ice out typically means better fishing. That's kind of the rule of thumb, considering the what I know about the North Woods and all the guys and the experience, and you hear that, right?
Yeah.
Again, day-to-day, pattern-to-pattern, lake-to-lake. There are going to be lakes that have, you know, there's lakes that are better when it's late ice. It's just a fact, right? And there's lakes that are better when it's early ice. So each body of water in that ecosystem is going to react to conditions differently. So there's not a carte blanche blanket statement. There just simply isn't. You're going to have to address each body of water. Now, typically, you know, that's going to be beneficial for most of those clear lakes, right? Lakes that are not tannic or turbid. Going to be pretty beneficial because the spawn, by the time you guys up super north, right, get around to doing your business, it shouldn't be like these lazy follows or beat up fish, right? When you're fishing post-spawn fish, some of these fish are just lethargic and they're ate up and they got the freaking gunk and the funk on them. Hopefully they've recouped a little bit and we've moved beyond, you know, tiny presentation swim jigs and rattle traps and all the early season stuff and moved into quote unquote more musky presentations. To make a gross flat statement, I think that's going to be tough. Now, when I look at say 2024 in general, I think it has a more of a positive effect the further north you go, like in, you know, Ontario, where we're waiting until July, you know, last week of June, early July is when most people are hitting this. I think I haven't looked in a minute, but it's always been sort of like last week of June for a hot minute, right? If the ice is off and we're getting close to that or it's breaking up, I could ask Danny Herbeck or Steve what's going on. But the earlier the ice out, the more it's going to hasten that whole spawning process and get them cleaned up and get them more in the musky zone, right? We've talked the last few years where, oh, it's late ice and it's this, that, and the other. And a lot of tactics and thoughts on how to sort of coerce fish that are kind of meh. So hopefully, you know, by the time muskies open, you can throw your single 500s and 700s and, you know, tiny topwaters in your game. Kyle, what lures would you recommend for a super shallow and very snaggy river? Excuse me. Max depth is about 5 feet in what would be considered the deep holes. Love the show. Sick of losing gear. Jay, you fish some shallow. What are some baits that come to mind? Not snaggy, not fally. kind of shallow water presentation. I got a couple in mind here, but let's see what you come up with.
Yeah. I mean, for sure, spinnerbaits. That'd be number one. I mean, of course, you can go on top with a, you know, walk the dog or maybe a slower tailbait presentation, topwater type lure presentation, but they've probably seen a lot of that. Spinner baits can get the done job slower. It's in their face longer.
They can get the, you said the done job slower. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Hopefully you can visualize the pockets and let that thing helicopter a little bit, you know.
Steve's tailgater, you say.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Figure eight tailgater,
meat grinders,
Bookers. Grim Reapers, sure, Pookers, yeah, the Pookers get a lot of fine, 850s, 870s, they all have numbers, Booker tail spinnerbaits, yeah, there's a bunch of them that have single hooks that are very weedless presentation. You know, if it's the type of weed, we've all been there probably where you get that crazy kind of weed that that'll even wrap around bearings and snaps and stuff like that. Well, go on top.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though. You're saying snaggy, though, too, which spinnerbaits are going to crawl over rocks pretty well. I've fished parts of the Fox before where it's just like you throw the bait out, but by the time you engage the reel, it's on the bottom. You're like, whoa, right? So baits that are conservatively hooked. And I'm flipping through here. I'm looking at stuff that's new at the shop, but here's bobby baits, you know, so dive and rise, you know, bobby baits, bobby baits, Titans, Suics, you know, Anthony Hot Tails makes a dive and rise. Any of those are dive and rise are going to be pretty clutch in shallow situations. I think more so than a crankbait.
Or more so than a glide bait, I think they're more weedless because of the pitch of the bait.
That's
the
thing, though. You keep saying weedless. I'm thinking snaggy. He said snaggy, and my head's rock, wood.
He's talking rock. Okay.
You know, weeds, you
man, yeah, bump them and let it rise. Yeah, make sure it's a floating, high floating model.
You know, I mean, the weeds are the weeds, and that is a never ending fight. Sand cats. I mean, I would probably throw, say, like a sand cat over a lipped crankbait. And I think, like, the sand cats, you know, you got the little ones, you got the mid-sized ones, everything in between. I can't make up my mind what that bait is. Like a sand.
Yes.
I don't.
Yeah, especially the 6-inch model. Yeah, it's so crankbaity.
I don't throw them a lot. But I do break them out when I'm kind of stumped. Like, we're getting follows on slammers, right? On fatty minnows. I go, where do I go from here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what is it? They make a 6. The 6 is what I have. They even go down to a 4. Okay, so the 6 is, like, crankbaity enough and jerkbaity enough, right? So, you know, when I'm ripping, say, like, or playing with a fatty minnow, tap, tap, pulse, you know, that kind of pseudo jerk bait. Yeah, if I'm just getting fall after fall after fall, a sand cat comes to mind because it has that crankbait wobble funkiness to it, and then the kind of the dive and rise thing. But I've used that around timber successfully. I've used that in rocky situations successfully as like a follow-up to crankbaits. But if I'm in something that, like, the deepest water, Jay's 5 feet, the proximity between you and a muskie that's even on the bottom in the deepest hole, right?
Mm-hmm.
The proximity you got to close is not that much. So I'm not going, hey, let's freaking rip rubber, you know? Unless you just want to pollute the lake with bulldogs or the river. You know, it's like when I came up with the tailgater, you know, pull pause in a shallow water situation where it's got the rear thing and it suspends and it helicopters down. So you can think outside of the box. I'm looking here, beaver baits. You can do an unweighted beaver in that situation. As far as jerk baiter, you could do the tailgater, you know, straight diving rise. Like I said, Titans, Suics, Bobbies. What's max running depth on? I just was looking at them, like a slammer 7J, 3 feet.
casted. Yeah, right so, around there. Yeah, I mean, that's where they were. Yeah.
You know, even if so, if the deep hole's that, you might be ticking and clicking. So you need to become accustomed to feeling those baits out.
And letting them do their thing, backing up, because they're very
exactly.
buoyant.
Exactly, that's the trick. Yeah. We're not. I wouldn't recommend, let's saddle up a swim bait. You know, let's saddle up something that is, we're going to be fighting and focused on. Well, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, with the minnow baits, and don't be afraid to let that thing break the surface. I mean, especially in that situation, yeah. You know, that's a good thing. Looks like an injured bait fish.
Yeah. Super shallow water as well. People are going, well, whatever. Spoons do pretty good getting through stuff. You know, spoons typically run shallow. Right, if it's a moderate retrieve or even a quick retrieve,
yeah, they really do.
Where like there's that Slop Master spoon. Doesn't Dr. Juice make a spoon?
Dr. Juice. Dr. Spoons.
Dr. Spoons.
Yeah,
is he a musician as well? It's like beating on his leg. It's me, Dr. Spoons. He's not a real physician by any means. He's just
so enamored with Dr. Juice. It's funny.
He's a purveyor of spoon tunes. Spoon the, man.
Tons of good Eppingers, too. The old Daredevil standby. Lots of sizes and models.
You ever get musky on them spoons? I've heard that so many times I want to scream. Yes, I have, unfortunately. But, you know, spoons are viable in super snaggy situation, especially like your spoons that have your single hook. Dr. Spoon. It's me from Spooner.
Yeah, put a grub on the back. It'll even ride higher, and it's Why great not? Action with that thing. Oh, they look good
heck,
with the grub on the back.
Heck, put two grubs on there, Jay says.
Oh, that's what Elmer would do.
Listen, the people from the grub consortium said put three. The more grubs, the better, Jay. Henry just got back into musky fishing after a 10-year hiatus.
Oh, Henry.
He doesn't say, but let's guess why he took 10 years off. Was he in prison, lost at sea?
I don't know.
Is he the Lindbergh baby and he was just returned? Mm. Who knows? It's a mystery to be honest. Henry, yeah. Henry, let us know. Just let us know. So he took 10 years off. I know the trend is longer rods, but I have a bunch of shorter rods from back in the day, 6 foot through sevens. Any recommendations of what I could use them for? Drink a Pepsi for me. Love the show. Gladly. Anyway, recommendations, Jay. I watched this episode of Bear Grylls. He made a lean-to one time out of some sticks. All right. Do you think like a 6'6" Premier, would that make like a good tent bracing, or like could you make a shelter outdoors with these?
Stouter the rod, the better. There if it's an old jerkbait rod, it'll make an excellent lean-to.
There you go, folks.
So, bingo.
You need something to put your scarecrow up with? Bingo.
That's a bingo.
What else you got, Jay? You know, you want to freaking be a hobo and tie a handkerchief to something and put it over your shoulder? Forget the stick. Use that old rod when you're hitchhiking along the railways of America.
Sure.
I don't know.
Why not?
Why not?
I hear you.
So, admittedly, I have the world's shortest musky rod on my boat, Jay. I have a freaking five. What is it? Is it a 5.9 they made? I would have to go out to the boat and look.
That one I used that one time we're not, doing Todd and no, Dave or something. Yeah, that little.
No, that's that rod is actually the rod my mom fished for years, which was a Berkley, and it's got one of the brown Abu Garcias. I'm looking at it right now. It's on my rod rack. That was my mother's musky rod for years. She's 3 foot one. So she's a wee little person. It was crazy. Dad met her in Hobbiton right there. Big Tolkien fan, you know. He visited some hobbits and found my mother. But no, that's a Berkley. There's I have this St. Croix rod that's ridiculously short. but I use it with Vipers. I was actually using it down the boat, like the Livingston Lures Viper, like the 8-inch. When I'm doing a trolling pass, I just launch a bomb cast with that bait and just drag it in the prop wash on the short little rod. So I just stick it in a Phobie sticking straight up above the engine. And it's a short little rod. I keep that if, you know, I've got a guest that brings a kid or something like that. And it makes a good little trolling rod. So your short rods, you could always troll with them. If you're up north, obviously you probably don't need to have 8 million rods. Something I've done in the past is there's a lot of cool charities. I can't remember which the one Booker does. If you wanted to make a donation of like
Wounded Warriors,
is it Wounded Warriors? He does a thing every year where it's like for vets, and some of them have disabilities. In the past, I've made donations of tackle, of old rods and things of that nature. So, you know, a short, you know, 6'9", a 7'6" rod for somebody that has mobility issues might be great. You know, if you're just looking to do something and just unload them, that, or you could make a lean to, Jay.
Make what?
A lean to, like you said. You could,
yeah.
You know, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they're really applicable other than trolling and, well, I take that back. Let me back that up. You know, if I was going to go out and be like, listen, these things are on a reef hog bite. You know, I might whip out the 6'9", you know, or
yeah, giant jackpot.
Yeah, you guys, exactly where I was going. You could, if you're like struggling with walking the dog or things of that nature with say like these modern 9s and 9.6s, 10s, whatever it might be, it could be applicable, you know, with like, say like the Titan, you don't need a short rod. Versus, say, like some of the old wooden baits that are a little bit easier to work on these short rods that are directly in front of yourself. Other than that, burn them, Jay. That's the other option. Just burn them in your front yard.
Just wear a mask. Wear a mask if you're going to do that. Right. Yeah, there's some hazardous stuff in there for sure. You're
probably going to get in trouble with your HOA. Just burn them. I'm teasing. Whatever. Give them to somebody. Use them as live bait rods. Do what thine will. Samuel, each summer my family heads to the Northwoods and pretends to musky fish. I like it. God bless you. You win the show, folks.
There you
the
go.
Big door prize tonight goes to. So they pretend to musky fish.
That's funny.
The month of July. We never catch much, anything. We don't catch, we don't catch much of anything. Because frankly, we kind of suck, but we have a lot of fun. Well, that's what it's about.
Yeah. All
right. I can
stop in the muskie shop. We'll tell you if there's, you know, a particular bite going on. There usually is. And,
yeah,
you know, the staff all knows what's going on. We all fish.
And
so
I can promise you there's no awards for winning muskie fishing. I can promise you that. Wow. There's, yeah. Everybody kind of sucks at it. Anyway, he wants to know what the tips are. Yeah, man. Go to the shop. Talk to the dudes. Tips for somebody that, if you know you're on good water, I mean, that's the thing. And I've talked to people in the past, and Jay, you've seen it over the eons. You've been up there. Jay was there when the lakes were formed. Little Jay was a single cell organism on the Flambeau chain. Most people don't know that.
I was here when Elmer was in high school.
Jay is immortal. And like I said, he kind of... He kind of evolved. It's weird. He wasn't born. He just kind of... He turned from like a lichen into this... Basically like a cricket. And it just... Remember your...
I'm just here.
Remember the 1780s when you were like salamander size? That's weird, man. That was weird. Anyway, folks, Jay's been there forever and can attest to people that will come up there and they struggle musky fishing, and then they'll tell us what lake they're on, and you go, oh, no wonder. If you're on a low...
Not disparaging them.
No offense. I miffed a guy one time. Remember the guy that was miffed because I said about trout leg, right? And that was always the joke about, we caught him on trout. And Herbeck was like, yeah, dude, that's been a thing forever. Where Trout Lake has been notoriously difficult in the 70s and 80s. If you're staying on, say, my, you know, make it up, you know, your family rents a cabin on, you know, Succotoban, and there's four muskies in there, but our cabin's on Succotoban. Maybe you need to venture out, you know, put the boat on the trailer or go with a guide if you don't have a boat or you're just whatever that's going on there, and get on some different water. I would say in the month of July in the Northwoods, if you're there for a week, you know,
you'll get on some fish, you know, it might not be jumping in the boat, but no. It's just like, and we'll try to aid you and steer you towards the right, right lakes and presentations at the right time.
Yeah. I mean, Jay, that's the reality for a lot of people. You get your week in the Northwoods, your week in Canada, your week wherever. Not a lot of practice, right? And that's normal. That's the normality of what musky fishing is to a lot of people. I would say up there, given a week, and let's be real, right? You know, if you're on a family vacation, are you fishing sun up to sundown every day? Probably not. Let's focus on majors, minors. Let's focus on sun up, sundown. And I would be blades, top water, and maybe some shallow cranks. What else do you think, Jay, for somebody? Not a lot of time to get dialed in, not a lot of time to practice.
Yeah, well, listen to input. I mean, inputs, you know, that's almost essential in that situation. You know, mm-hmm. You're coming up kind of and driving kind of blind. So, but the problem with input is that you don't know where it's coming from and how legitimate it is. Not that people are stretching the truth or something, but, you know, one guy might be only fishing 5 o'clock till dark and not a minute after dark and using one presentation every day. And he might be struggling or he might be lighting them up. So, and vice versa, the next guy might be just doing morning trips. And so try to get specifics out of them if you can. And, you know, ask the staff. Most of the staff or a lot of the staff at the muskie shop during the summer, are guides, you know, and they're on the water quite a bit. Sometimes they're even on the water before they start their shifts. So they'll have a lot of good input as far as lure presentations. Yeah. If it's July, right.
Yeah, and heck, it could be September, but, you know, the reality of the sport is not guys that do it every day they're off, all day.
Absolutely right.
The reality of the sport is my family trip is, or since we were 10, fill in the rest of the story. And that's normality. It is supposed to be fun, and thank God this guy's having fun with it, right?
Yeah.
You crawl into the belly of the beast and go, well, I haven't caught a fish in 4 days. I'm losing my mind, right? Who cares? It's stupid. What I would say is this, if I could give you, without overloading you know, you're listening to the podcast and there's all this stuff and all this and all that, just become well-versed with each bait style, right? So if I get a week to fish once a year and the musky rods come out once a year, right, Jay?
Yeah.
Well, let's spend a little bit of time. Let's get a bait. Let's get baits that work, that are like easy, right? So we got our bucktails. We got our topwaters. We know that. A slammer, or a crane, or a booker. Throw it, turn the handle, right? Twitch, twitch, pause. Easy. Easy to learn. Booker's done 30 years of videos on it. Go to his YouTube channel or here on the app or whatever. He'll show you how to twitch a bait. Okay, we got that. Get a hellhound. And you go, okay, tap, it goes left, tap, it goes right. I got that down. And then get a rubber bait and go pull, pause. Get the basic retrieves down. So at least for that 1 week of a year, you know, we have a well-rounded plan of attack, right? Get a Titan, throw it out, turn the handle, stop. Turn the handle, stop. Turn the handle, stop. It dive and rises. I think a lot of guys that have that one relegated week or whatever it might be a year for their musky fishing endeavors are 100% confident in and reliant on blades and top water because that's all they ever throw because they don't spend the time to learn the other retrieves.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to play into the fact that, you know, sunlight versus right. overcast situations and time of day have huge impact on lure selection. So, you know, we should do a whole podcast revolving around that before summer starts.
Yeah. You know? The weekender's guide to, or the weaker. I ran into a guy one time, and this was out on 70, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were coming back, and I said, run ahead of me. I'll meet you guys, you know, in town. And I had to gas up. Okay, stopped at one of the sea stores on 70. Guy sees the boat. What are you fishing for? Fishing for skis. Okay, we are too. We're here and we're staying over on Shish. We rented, I was at Airbnb or a house or whatever the heck it was, whatever. Or we had a house. What are you getting them on? Well, we're getting them on tubes. Right? What? You're getting them on what?
Tubes. Yeah, yeah.
And I get one out and I show him. Whoa. And I gave him one of the baits and was like, you can have it. It's fine. You know, come down to the shop. I was trying to be, you know, diplomatic or whatever you want to call it. Check it out. How do you work it? And I said, what do you guys throwing? It was a typical thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes if I'm a, you know, I'm a 1 week a year dude and that's the family trip or that's the week you get off and you got time to do it, you might be better off learning some of the other retrieves. And you don't have to do it on one trip. You go, okay, this trip I'm going to, by God, I'm going to get a follow on a bulldog. We don't have to catch one. No one cares. And I love, I'll tell you this. What I love about this sport is like, I, you know, the big, the higher than mighty I am thine musky lords don't care, right? It's silly. But there's dudes, I got clients and friends, you know, they got their one trip a year and they got trophies, right? They've had little trophies made, and whoever catches the biggest fish of our week is the winner. Well, how cool is that? Or, you know what I'm saying? Very friendly, like family and friends. And that's a lot of this sport. But, you know, you're hamstrung by you musky fish once a year. Just get well versed in it. Don't overthink it. Take the basics. And Jay, like you said, it'd be a heck of a thing to work on. It's like, what do you do in 1 week and how do you do it without it being, you know, master class level? How can we quickly get to success in the most discernible way? You know what I'm saying? I don't know the answer to that right off the top of my head, other than, you know, because everybody's kind of dumbing into one. But you look at some of these guys where you go, I'm not knocking anybody. I have clients and friends and buddies and pals and all this stuff where they go, we fish, you know, some Northwoods Lake X, Y, and Z. We fish Lake YYZ, and you know, we caught two last year. Well, how did you fish? Oh, we fished every day. Every day. You know, we stayed right in the lake and we'd do lunch, and after lunch we fished till sunset. And you're going, okay, these guys are putting in 6-7 hours on a lake where you could pretty much count on getting two or three. You know what I'm saying? If you put me in the boat on that, I'm not saying every time. I'm just going, okay, 7 days, mean we're going to have some days where, and it's not the lake's fault. It's a skill differential or reading the water differential where most of your musky angling takes place north of Chicago from July until the 1st of September. That is it. Hour per hour, human hours of musky fishing, I would bet as 90% takes place in those 2 months. Would you venture to guess that's probably
accurate? It's right up there. Yeah, right up there.
All you got to do is drive through frickin', you know, the upper half of Wisconsin and Minnesota on your way to Ontario. You'll see the boats.
You'll see the boats.
You know, you show up, if guys, you've never been up there, oh, here it is, musky opener in the Northwoods, and then frickin' nobody's, you know, it's a little bit this, a little bit this, July, boom. Explosion. So yeah, it's just a different approach, and there's nothing wrong with that. Just brush up on some of those skills, try to add some presentations. Now the other thing I'd say is this, dude, and you know, muskies don't take a resume. One of my favorite lines in this sport, that's a bookerism, but muskies don't take a resume. Get some good figure eights going.
Like super important. Absolutely.
You know, you give me 7 days of, I don't care what the conditions are, and you give me bucktails and topwater, and I'm fishing a few 5-6 hours a day, you're going to get your opportunity up there. You're going to get your opportunity.
Well, look at the few fish I caught last year. I mean, I don't fish that much, and it's just right. Like all the fishing I did with you, remember back? I mean, most of them were on figure eights.
Right. Well, it's a percentage game. If you go – you know, 60% of the fish in the past year were caught on figure eights. Well, if you, take that away and where you at? Just get good on figure eights. Do an oval, do whatever. Just make sure that mechanic is there. I've fished with guys, notoriously guys that do trips like this, and they're kind of half about it. Well, I've never caught a fish on a figure eight. Well, it's not because you can't catch them. It's because you're not doing it. There's some things, and it's not a ball buster or anything like that. It's just like catching fish is way more fun than not catching fish. You know, so brush up on some of those core elements. You know, keep it fun. Don't beat your head against the wall. You know, talk about ruining something. Do it for a living. Keep it fun, but why not be foundationally good? And I think that's what I'm trying to get at. You know, if I go mini golfing with my wife, she annihilates me. Well, I can't putt to save my life, but she can. So her, you know what I'm saying? Like, foundationally, she knows what she's doing. I'm just like, oh, I know nothing, right?
Everyone knows about her serious putting skills.
Buddy.
Legendary.
She's banned from Elmer's Fun Park.
Yeah, too good.
Hustling people, believe
me. Jody Michael. Yeah.
She won a Camaro two summers.
What kind of handicap does she have on the mini course?
Well, mental.
It's a mental handicap.
It is. Brett, love the Kraken. I got a 48 on a few weeks ago using the light upward snaps SP talks about. But in your Pike video, you were using low rod angles. What's the story on a lower rod angle with the Kraken or jerk baits? Okay, cool. Great question.
Now, you guys were running more weight at that particular time, is my observation in remembering that.
The problem
right?
was this. Not the problem, but the fact of the matter. The video portrays in some capacity, but not, it's like chop and what water conditions are. Everything, you know, video is a flat thing. We're bobbing a little bit more, and then you have like stabilization in the cameras, and then Jay stabilizes, and then now it looks like we're just kind of bobbing in, you know, 6 inches of water, right? So camera stabilization, post stabilization, whatever. It looks like, and there's different points where it's less than, whatever, as far as the chop. When we're ripping up and you're in 2 footers, now we're adding 2 foot of hop, right? Boom, you're up. The low rod angle, treating it almost like a pull pause or a twitch, allowed that bait to surge forward and then fall. So pop down, pick up the slack, slow, pop, to try to eliminate like the jump up of the boat. With that being said, also, the fish were running stupid deep. So a low rod angle meant that bait was popping up a couple feet. So we were staying, I hate the word strike zone, we were staying in the depth zone that we needed to be more so than upward pops. And that was a matter of dialing in, right? Oh, well, if we keep our low rod angle and we know these fish are at, oh, dude, and you've, can I just complain for a second? You're on the boat with two people that keep time in military time, number one. Two, the depth finder's in meters, right?
You're just like, you're constantly adjusting and going, okay, all right.
Doing it, and I'm like,
brain,
you know,
scramble.
Yeah, you're going, we're in. But, you know.
Meters.
Meters, how many meters? And it's 0500. What time are we leaving? Give me bushels and baskets, please. I'm truly American.
Water temp reads two.
Two. Oh, it was. And you're like looking at that and your brain just, ah. It, if you're not thinking in those, you know, in those metrics, every time you look at the freaking hummingbird, you just want to scream. But nonetheless, that was to maintain a running depth. You can get a, and we were like on the Krakens we were running, we had the 28 grams in them. We stacked at one point, we're stacking like that one of the Titan weights, because the Titan weights and the Kraken weights are interchangeable. We're stacking like a 7 gram on top of the 28, because it's that trade off of like deep baits are slow. Well, we need a deep fast bait, so heavier, and just trying to get it down there. So dialed in presentation. The same thing, we were running the Kraken with the paddle tail. And the rip tail, it was like, how much weight can we get on this dude and keep it down?
Because then imagine with the paddle tail, that's slowing the descent rate even more exaggerated than the standard tube tail, right? I mean, it's got more drag.
It falls. I mean, if you, again.
But it's got more weight, too.
No, not necessarily. Those tails are hollow.
Okay.
About halfway back through. So the wire that comes off the crack and it sets in there and there, it'll keep it from tearing itself up, but it's like hollow there. I could tell. I actually have like a proto package hanging here. I can't tell you the exact like weight in grams on the difference of the two, but the paddle tail sort of catches it. Where the tube tail wants to let it fall vertically, the paddle tail creates drag for the vertical fall, and the bait just runs flat. It was never its original intent, but it makes a heck of a swim bait. Just because it's round nature. So you want to talk about belly roll. Well, the whole thing just rolling, rolling, rolling. Keep them doggies rolling. Yep. Raw hide, Jay.
Sure.
Raw hide. That's it. Good night, folks. But anyway.
We got both kind of music here. Country and Western.
Reggae. Country reggae. Sorry. But, you know, the swim bait thing, again, any bait, if you want to get a running depth that's deeper, your rod angle will change it. You can do that with bulldogs. You can do it with just anything. But when we were tackling that, and it's just bizarro, Jay, like we're in like, you know, convert it 25 to 28 feet of water over shell beds. And the fish are coming like, if your baits are not skipping, we pick more shells like mussels. Every cast, you're like pulling mussels and old weeds off. If you didn't do that, you wouldn't get a bite. And you're like, oh my God, this sucks. It was just brutal some days. Casey Ketchum. I like that.
Mm.
I can't break 40 for the last 2 years. I've caught a few muskies this year, or excuse me, the past years, but they're all mid to high 30s. Can you help me get over the hump? Okay. Let's just go back to that conversation about like the guy that fishes a week a year, and Casey probably fishes more, maybe not, doesn't matter. The dude that's struggling might be on a lake that is, and what me were talking about being open to going to other lakes. If Casey's catching fish and he can't break 40, is he on a body of water that just has a ton of mid 30s and upper 30s?
Yeah,
and a 40, let's say this body of water, a 44 would be like the Donkey Kong.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? There's a couple of body waters. There are bodies of water that are like that, where
sure
a 44, a 45 might as well be a 59. That's the dominant fish. That's
44 is an awesome fish, flat out, but yeah. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah, there's different systems. Yeah.
Not every, like, I mean, Booker always said, and I love it, every lake has its giant. But I believe in some capacity that's proportional, right? So, you know, and I don't, he's not complaining. Nobody complains about fish like that. But, yeah, he would like to break the 40 mark. Try a different body of water, right? And with that being said, let's say you can't. Let's say that's just for some reason. I'm just assuming. This is what he's got. Let's run deeper and bigger presentations. If you're over those fish and you can forego them, let's move out deeper and let's move to bigger presentations. The best way to not catch muskies is going with really, really big baits. Right? If I want to guarantee I don't get a strike that day, right? Let's throw a 2-pounder. But when I get that strike, good Lord, watch out. Right? Or, hey, you know, let's put on a lip lock. We're not going to pick up a 31, I promise you that. You know? That's the closest thing, like, to a wish maker I have is one of Duff's lip locks. You know? It ain't, I'm sure we could, and don't get me wrong, but the dinks ain't coming unglued for that thing. They might, you know, they might look at it and go, hey, are you my cousin? You know? So if you need to up the size class of fish you're catching, let's up size the presentations, obviously. Let's focus on areas that are more conducive to big fish. Have you dissected your body of water and gone, what areas are adjacent to deep holes, deep water, and transitional zones, right? Are we fishing things that are big fish areas? Big fish want quick access to deep water. Deep water is relative, we know that. But again, size is relative to each body of water. So you may be on a body of water where the potential to really get over 40 or to the 40 mark consistently is not there. And sometimes you just got to go, this is what it is and enjoy it. But make those augmentations and make those changes in your plan. Bigger baits, more deep tactics, further off the structure, further off of cover, and more transitional, and see if that helps. Brandon, I keep breaking the lips off my crankbaits while I'm trolling. What am I doing wrong? Now, he didn't specify if he did it while he was trolling or if he was just breaking them with his hand, Jay.
Or a pliers.
So if you're breaking baits with pliers in your boat, what's your first thing to stop doing?
Frustration.
Yeah, stop breaking stuff.
Yeah, just stop it.
Stop.
Quit.
Don't do that.
Yep. Keep the bait in the water.
Put it away. Don't touch that. Anyway, breaking lips, trolling, it happens. Again, I was just talking about Duff. Love Duff, and it's like his stuff is super tough because it's Duff stuff. He's got the metal lips. You're not gonna break those. I mean, you could, but good luck. You know, so plastic lips, Lexan lips, if you're making constant bottom contact, it's par for the course. Back to mini golf, par for the course.
Yeah.
Right? You're not going to make constant contact with the bottom or hard wood, you know, hard rock covered structure and wood and blah, 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 blah. And not pay the toll. Okay. One thing I would say, the only tip I'd have on this, if you are breaking lips and you're trolling nasty stuff, you could theoretically back the drag down just a tick. So when the bait hits, you get a little pull out, right? And it will lessen the impact just by a hair, but it's not what I like to do. If I'm breaking lips, I better be catching fish. So if you're catching fish and you're breaking lips off of baits, you're just paying the toll, right? The amount of depth raiders I have just tortured, the amount of headlocks where I'm literally taking files to the aluminum lips and cleaning them up because I've just dinged, like we're talking just doinked the crap out of them, Jay, right?
Yeah.
Just peeled the aluminum back. Oh, man. It's part of the game. It's par for the course. You know, and if you're not catching fish and you're hitting these areas and you're breaking stuff, do something else. Jeff, need a new reel. What's your current recommendation? It seems like Steve changes it up every so often. Is there a reason he does this? Does it matter? Is it just because of what you guys are talking about? Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Well, I can answer that.
What's that?
A guy like you, he tries a new reel, something that's fairly new on the market, let's say. Okay, I'm not using this Daiwa or this Shimano, and you use it, and you're like, this is an awesome reel, and it truly is.
Right.
And then you try brand B, you know, of something that's just top shelf, perfect musky reel, and you use that, and you go, this reel's great, too. It really is.
There is
a lot of good products on the market.
I'm looking at a shelf full of reels right now, and you know, it's been a minute since I've hit a dud. In the past, we hit more duds than anything, but now it's an even field, dude. So a couple years ago, I was throwing Shimano. Now, and I was throwing a Boo, and now I'm throwing Daiwa. Yes, it's a matter of like, okay, we're gonna mix it up. I'm not gonna lie, it's a conscious decision. Okay, we Steve was throwing Shimano. Well, let's throw this. Okay, that's fine. I'm not preferential. As long as it's left-handed and doesn't break, I'm in. I'm not picky. I don't have a problem with any of these reels, any of the modern reels. I've talked incessantly about how good those pins were. The Kuma Komodo is good. The Trunks is good. The Daiwa stuff is good. The Beasts are good. There's more good reels than bad reels, finally.
Period. In history.
Pick a reel that's comfortable for you physically and move on. That's where I'm at, where I'm just going, okay, can I try these now? Sure. Throw them, Steve. Go to the Muskie shop, get them in your hand, and go, this feels good, and then buy that one.
Yeah, I am not under contract with anybody or anything. I work at the Muskie shop. We sell all this stuff. Yeah. I use a lot of it, or have tried a lot of it. If I love it, I'm going to let you know.
Yeah, there you go.
And you're the same way.
Yep. Nate Dog, how much difference does a straight wire leader make over, say, a fluoro or guarding glide baits? Should I be throwing my glide baits on fluoro at all, or should I have a dedicated setup? Mm-hmm. Nope. I don't think you need a dedicated setup just for gliders. Maybe you're like the one dude and you got all these extra rods. Maybe you could do that. But the difference to me, yes, you're going to get a little bit more snap. But if you focus on your retrieves, you can get just as much snap with fluoro. It's about how much slack you take out of the line. You know, a little extra practice, a little care and attention, you're going to be in good shape. You know, if I'm dialed in on a glide thing, absolutely. Why not? But most of the time we're playing, hey, you're the guy that's got a week, or you got a weekend. Focus on getting good retrieves out of any leader material. When you're dialed in, you can tweak the leader as needed to make your life easier. That's my take. Jay, what do you think?
I agree wholeheartedly. I use 130-pound, fluorocarbon for the majority of the big bait stuff. Go a little bit lighter fluorocarbon early season with light baits, but small baits, but nope, make it work.
I mean, you got you've got a lot of options. Yeah, you know, let's say you're a dude and your deck's covered in musky rods. Why not have a rod that's a dedicated jerk bait? You know, Dive and Rise is really good on straight wire. Walk the Dog's really good on straight wire. Your glide baits obviously are good on straight wire. Yeah. If you're a multi-rod guy, have a jerk bait, glide bait, Walk the Dog setup, absolutely run straight wire on it. You know, for me, I run one rod. And in the cold water period and pre-spawn, post-spawn, I run a 5/3-1. Once it's past that, I run 6. And I one rod, one reel, and I run a Muskie Shop 130 12-inch leader for everything. I can make it work because I've adapted my retrieves to get the best action out of the baits with that material. So it's like, it's what came first, the chicken or the egg? If you can do a good retrieve on a fluorocarbon leader, then it's a good retrieve. The leader material does not dictate good or bad. Your retrieves dictate that. What material makes it easier might be an influencer. However, you can compensate on all fronts. So you don't have to have anything, right? You can go all straight wire and really do a nice twitch thing if you leave enough slack. But, you know, for me, fluorocarbon, multi-strand wire, straight wire, whatever you got, we're going to make it work. And I recommend you do the same. Minnesota Muskie Mahler. I fish the Metro Lakes and I hate it. Follow after follow after follow. That's all.
Ouch.
I hear. Wow, boys. That's it. He didn't even write anything more. I just hate it. I hate him. Good night. Fish the Metro Lakes. Follow after follow after follow. Conditioned fish that just got caught is what it feels like. I'm looking for some figure eight tips or tricks to really get dialed in. Love you, boys. Love the pod. Thanks for all the laughs. Figure eight tricks. Figure eight tips. Talking on the boat today, Jay.
Yeah.
A guy was asking about clicking the reel in the figure eight. Well, that's about catching big fish. But when we were discussing that, like how it becomes secondhand, where when you come into the first turn of the figure eight, you click the reel into free spool and then thumb it with your thumb, right? That's a mechanical thing. And I think what's important with figure eights is each figure eight, you have thousands in a musky season, thousands upon thousands of opportunities to practice. Some of us take advantage of that. Some of us do a lazy J. observing and paying attention to the width of your turns, super important. I would say on conditioned fish, and I'm not the master of conditioned fish, but when I fish for them, really smooth, perfect transitions from the cast into the figure eight seem to be imperative, right? We're not going to come in this herky-jerky, oh, there he is, and then like kind of do the thing, right? It needs to be a smooth transition. So
yeah,
when is that transition taking place? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most important thing. I concentrate on my retrieves, obviously working the bait, right? You know, trying to.
Right.
But is I am always consciously trying to affect that entrance of the figure eight. You know, no matter, you know, I might be standing awkwardly in the back of somebody's boat, you know, with 1 foot to the left kind of cockeyed and the other one kind of balancing on that. We're moving pretty quickly. It's wavy or whatever. And it's just like, if that thing's coming straight in, you're already out of room. You're going to have a bad figure eight. And if there was a fish behind that that you couldn't see, which is the case most of the time,
yep.
No dice, baby.
No dice. You've got to be thinking about that transition the entire time. I don't care what bait it is. I don't care what bait it is. It's application and running depth. One of the two, application and a running depth, or sometimes both, changes in the last 6-7 feet. Right? Rip baits like your pool paws, your Medusas, your Bulldogs, you know, kind of hard to rip right there before we get in the first turn. You have a transitional thing that you need to be paying attention to and go, what are we doing in this 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000 kind of deal, right? You got a 3-second window, a 2-second window. What's happening there? Don't be surprised that the bait showed up. That's first and foremost. And you're talking about yeah. your body language. Be prepared for it before it gets there. Don't be, oh, now I got to figure it out. And I see guys all the time. Hour on hour on hour on hour, 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 cast, 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 cast.
Yep.
This herky jerky. Oh, there's the bait now. No.
Yeah, set up the angle of attack there before it come in. You need to be conscious how much line's out.
Right, and keep that thing from looking right at you. Keep him mm-hmm. engaged with the bait and then turn him away. That would be my thing, is anticipate the bait's arrival. Make accommodations for whatever bait that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it's a glide bait where we, that's one of the things. Everybody's got a plan to catch this monstrous muskie that hits that on the cast and just annihilates blades or a topwater. Oh, he crushed it. What are you going to do? You got 6 feet of line and a 55 behind a hellhound. What are you going to do? And you're ripping a bulldog.
Yeah.
And you got right. 6 feet, 7 feet. What's your plan?
Have what are you going to do when more than 50% of your opportunity lies in the figure eight presentation?
Right. What? Think about it. Have a mental plan for, okay, you know, if a fish is behind this or every time I come in what I do in the figure eight or how I dress it is often dictated by what's going on pattern wise. But let's say it's in the winter and I'm ripping rubber. And I go, well, it makes no sense for me to pull this thing up superbly shallow and then try to force this fish to come up and eat it when he's down at 10 feet. Okay, are we doing deep figure eights? Where are we starting? A figure eight, I mean, it's funny when you spend as much freaking time thinking about this crap as I do. A figure eight is all good and well. Everybody does this superfluous, here's my figure eight, and he didn't eat it. Your figure eight is as much a part of your presentation style as the cast.
Sure is.
That's a whole other podcast. Heck, that's a whole other book on how do we augment our figure eights to best suit our presentations. Right? What are we doing? If fish are deep, why am I trying to force them to eat shallow?
And again, I've said this before, yeah. Not like I'm Mr. Super Expert here, but I've seen it a lot on people's videos where sometimes they catch them, sometimes they don't. Depth change is so important.
Well, that's the whole thing. Absolutely.
And people don't do that. It's like I did a nice wide figure eight, and he was there and there and there, and I almost had him, and he came around twice, but it's just like there really wasn't a depth change, it's you know, that was...
too much golf talk this evening because I made the mini golf joke. But I've said on the boat before. I've probably said on the podcast. Muskie fishing is the closest to golf because, you know, anybody can hit the long drive, but you make your money, you win your money on the green putting. That's why my wife's a hustler. But you make your money putting. You impress people with these long shots. I don't golf. I've absorbed through osmosis on the boat all of these years. I've heard of this golf crap. And I thought about, okay, anybody can catch one on the cast. Trained monkey throws bait, turns handle. Muskie eats it. Win, right? Opposed to the dynamics and the intricacies of how do I keep this fish engaged? How I keep him, you know, from spooking. That's a possibility that sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. What am I doing? You know, my body language. If I got to lunge forward 2 feet, you know, I'm fishing Metro muskies and I'm not going to be leaning back 2 feet. Oh, there's a follow and lunge forward and do something stupid. Right? Be prepared at all times and then address what kind of presentation we're doing. What's the running depth of this? You know, if we're pulling muskies off the bottom with, say, like a depth rater in mid-depth stuff, well, why bring him up to the top? He doesn't want to be up top. Are we going to just, every figure eight, are we jamming the rod down and keeping that bait at 6 feet? That's a thought. Something to, a lot of stuff to unpack there, Jay. Anyway, we covered some Q&A. We got more for next week. We'll ramble on about something else, Jay. Say goodnight, Jay Bird.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. Night.